Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. I'm your host, Willem van der Horst. If ever you're listening to this for the first time, then this show, I interview creators and thinkers from different backgrounds like advertising, marketing, media, gaming, design, so game design, but other types of design as well. In short, I mean, it just basically tends to revolve around areas I'm both professionally and personally interested in, like the ones that I just cited, quite simply. You can find all the other episodes of the podcast on my website. That's at www.icecreamforeveryone.net, just like the name of the show, which is the name of my blog and the name of my business. Everything spelled out, icecreamforeveryone.net at the end. On there, you can also find my weekly newsletter. That's a letter about a different topic I write every week. It's kind of a long-form article, 1,500 to 2,000 words every week. You can sign up by email and get it first. Or you can read it online or on my blog later. I've started publishing it online. I'm still experimenting with this whole thing. But so far, I'm getting some good reviews. You might be able to hear I've been sick these last few days, as in I'm still kind of nasal in the way that I'm speaking. So you might be able to hear that. But I'm also mentioning it because I felt like crap a few days ago, and I decided to write a whole newsletter about it, 1,500 words of me lamenting in a grandiose, or hopefully grandiose, mock tragedy fashion. I had a few friends really enjoyed it, told me it was very funny, so, you know, I'd love to hear what you think, and tell me, yeah, if you read it, tell me what you think of it, obviously. What else? Obviously, I mean, that was my website, but you might be listening to this via iTunes or Stitcher or whatever your favorite podcasting app is. If you do that, or if you do, or if you have a few spare minutes, that would make a hell of a difference. Check out iTunes, because that's where the most people listen to the podcast. Give it a rating or review, as in the show, obviously. Like, look up Ice Cream for Everyone. Give the show a rating or a review. If you enjoy it, it makes a hell of a difference for other people to be able to find the show. And I kind of bang on about that, but, you know, it helps. It really does. If you share it with a friend, or if you just leave a rating or a review on iTunes, it makes a hell of a difference to help other people find the show. If you enjoy it, it makes a hell of a difference to me. If you're trying to participate, or if you would like to participate in any one way, that's the way I like it. Of course, that's what came up to mind immediately. Anyway, I'm getting far off field, really getting far from the topic. Let's get back to the topic. My guest today, I'm very excited, is Philippa White. Philippa founded TIE, the International Exchange. After a really successful career in advertising, working with some of the best advertising agencies in the business, Philippa founded this thing called TIE. And I found out about it first last year through a talk from John Steele, a pretty famous planner and strategist who wrote some of the most recommended and consistently recommended books. I mean, it's probably the first book I read about strategic planning called Truth, Lies, and Advertising. If you want to work in the advertising business, if you want to be a planner or strategist in the marketing and advertising business, it's kind of the book you consistently hear about. Another book he wrote that was awesome called Perfect Pitch. If you want to learn about pitching new business and the art of pitching, that's a fantastic book to read. But again, diverging, getting off topic. But he mentioned the International Exchange in this talk he was giving for the APG, the Account Planning Group, the Account Planning Group in the UK. And so I got curious immediately, because what the International Exchange does is work with professionals in the marketing and advertising industry. So it could be agencies, but it could be also, you know, marketing professionals working for brand organizations or media organizations, you know, a number of different things, trains them and pairs them up to work with nonprofit organizations, charities, NGOs, who might need those kind of branding and communication skills. And then throws them in developing countries like, you know, Brazil or different parts of Africa, in India. And they have to run a project from start to finish that's going to be making a difference to whatever cause they're working on and using all their communication skills in the process. I thought it was an absolutely fascinating initiative. And I reached out to Philippa, and I really, really was appreciative of the fact that she was able to give me some time for this interview for the podcast. So, of course, she gives a lot more details about everything. And if ever you tune out and don't listen to the end or for any reason, I mean, I doubt you wouldn't because it was a great conversation. But there's a shout out at the end Philippa gives and I wanted to make it again. So there's about to, there's four people about to start a new international exchange placement. So four professionals from the advertising and marketing industry, they're about to all start their placement at the same time next month in April 2016. One's going to be in Ghana, another one in Africa. Well, two in Africa, one in Ghana, one in Malawi, one in India, and one in Brazil. They're all working with different organizations coming from different agencies or marketing backgrounds or jobs. You know, might they? I don't even know what they do. There might be designers or... And they're going to be updating the Instagram and Facebook pages for the International Exchange. So if you like the Facebook page, follow the Instagram, follow Twitter, you're going to be able to have the updates from all these different peoples in different parts of the world that are using their branding, marketing, advertising skills to help an organization make a difference for people. And I think that's a very exciting thing. So go and check out those pages. The links are in the show notes or just type in the International Exchange. And without further ado, here's Philippa White. Enjoy. Hi, Philippa. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So do you usually go by Philippa or Philippa or Pippa?
I go by Philippa, but I've got many names that people give me. So,
Oh, really?
But I introduce myself to, as Philippa, and then I get called Pip or Phil or PJ. But I call myself Philippa.
Yeah. And we're contacting, I'm in London right now, and you're in Brazil, correct?
Yeah, I'm in the northeast of Brazil. Olinda is where I live. It's an old colonial town. It's a UNESCO heritage site. It's an absolutely beautiful little place on the sea. It's right beside Recife, which is the main port town or city. I mean, and we're talking 1.4 million people. So, you know, it's not that small.
Yes. That sounds amazing. I'll definitely be asking some more questions about that a little bit later. But as I said just before we started to hit the record button, I usually start with a warm-up question.
Great.
And I noted looking around and preparing a little bit for this interview that you won once the a short story contest, the from the Manitoba Young Authors short story contest.
That's hilarious. Yes, I did. I can't even remember how old I was, but I did. I that was back in Winnipeg where I grew up.
Yeah. Do you remember what the short story was about?
I do. Really quick. Yeah. Hilarious. My uncle, who's since passed away, but he, was, I was born in South Africa and he was really involved in the anti-apartheid movement. Mm-hmm. And he, whenever I'd go to South Africa to go and visit my family, I'd hear incredible stories of how he was painted purple in the, you know, in the protests against the government. And he was actually Nelson Mandela's doctor, during his presidential campaign. And he was really involved with the ANC and I was always really inspired by him. And Johnny Clegg is the name of a South African, white South African singer who, you know, Johnny Clegg. So he, Jaluka and Savuka were the bands that he created with, with, other, South Africans who were black. And he was the first one to sort of cross that divide, if you like, really publicly during this time. And there was a song that he wrote, which really touched me just about apartheid and the struggles that many of the black population face on a daily basis. And it really inspired me and got me thinking of my uncle. And so I kind of created this story around a mix of like the song that inspired me and my uncle's background and stuff. And so I wrote that. So I got a bronze prize, I think it was, for the Manitoba Young Authors Association.
Wow.
So yeah, so that was the inspiration. And to be honest, actually, my uncle was a huge inspiration for even setting up what I set up.
Yeah.
I have to say that there were a couple of key moments in my life that really got me going, and he was definitely one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. So of course, it's always good because I never had any idea that this was going to lead into this kind of question and how much of an influence it was, which is brilliant. And also a fantastic segue to ask you a little bit more about where you grew up and where you're from. So you were born in South Africa, you just said?
Yeah. So I was born in South Africa, in Cape Town. Yep. So if you've been there, you know it's an absolutely gorgeous place.
Oh, I'd love to. Well. A friend from the States was just having dinner with us last weekend and was coming back from a holiday over there and telling me how amazing it was. I have a few friends over there, so it's on my list.
Should be on your list because it really is an incredible place. So I grew up there, but at about 2.5, my family left. My dad was a doctor. He's also since passed away, but he was a doctor. And he had a 1-year fellowship in London, Ontario in Canada. Mm. And my mom from London, England, basically after a year in Canada realized, okay, there's no way I'm going back to apartheid South Africa. I'm not bringing my children up in that kind of situation. And so they stayed in Canada, went to go and see Winnipeg in May and thought, wow, Winnipeg's an amazing place. I don't know if you know anything about Winnipeg, but.
Well, my sister-in-law's from Winnipeg and she.
Oh my gosh.
But she decided to leave pretty early. I don't think she ever wanted to go back.
So anyway, exactly. And you probably know through conversations with her in May, it is an amazing place. And to be honest, Winnipeg is actually quite a lovely place. But February is completely different. And so they actually ended up moving in February and, a bit of a shock to the system to say the least. But they ended up staying and we grew up in Winnipeg. I don't know if you know, but license plates in Canada, each province has a license plate and there's a phrase underneath it. So Alberta is wild rose country and beautiful British Columbia. And Manitoba is friendly Manitoba. And to be honest, Winnipeg is a very friendly, wonderful place. And, you know, I also can't see myself ever living there again, not because it's a horrible place, but just because of my work and it would never work in Winnipeg. But it was a great place to grow up. But I did tell my family the entire time, I don't plan to live here for the rest of my life. I'm too big for Winnipeg, I would say. Mom's like, okay, you're crazy. I can't, I can't live here. And because my family or my parents, my dad was half South African, half Scottish, British. And so I started with an English accent and my family, my parents both had very strong English accents and the culture and our family was very British. And I always really related to the UK. And so I always dreamt of living in London. Mm. So I finished my part of my university. Well, I finished.
Actually, before you start there, I just had a quick question about Winnipeg because I've heard it's also nicknamed Winterpeg. And my sister-in-law explained to me that in the winter, the radio telling the temperature would usually express temperature in this number of seconds until freeze point or something like that.
Yeah, it's minus 30, 35 kind of regularly in the wintertime. And then with the wind chill, it can easily get to like minus 60. And if you're walking to, there are times where you really can't be outside, but there are many times when you're walking to school and you've got a hat and you've got a scarf and you've literally just got that piece of your eyes showing and you walk with your hands kind of cut like from your chin sort of over your eyes and then you just blow. So you can just get all the warm air just to that part so it doesn't completely freeze.
I interrupted, but yes, please tell us.
Winterpeg. So anyway, I went to the University of Western Ontario to do business at a business school called the Richard Abbey School of Business. And I finished my degree in Thailand. And so I lived in Bangkok for about 6 months, which was one of the most incredible experiences of my life and another turning point that helped me get inspired to do what I do. So it was an exchange and I was one of the, it was the first time that our university had done this exchange and I was one of like three foreigners at this university, which the princess went to. And, it was an incredible, immersion into a completely different world and culture, and really provided me with the understanding and realization actually that how we do things isn't actually how everyone else does things and how it's so important to realize that the world does not revolve around North American calendar. It was the year 2001 when I was there and obviously we'd just gone through the year 2000, how the world's going to end and, how Nostradamus, predicted that literally the world was going to end and everyone was freaking out. And, you arrive in Thailand and it's the year 4,562 or something. And you just think, what are we, how do we think that the world revolves around our calendar? It's insane.
Yeah.
So
how did you get into the idea of going to Thailand? You just found out about the opportunity through school? Is it like an announcement
My degree, it was a business degree and, you were allowed, in your final term or final year to choose either the first term or the last term of your degree to go kind of anywhere. There were a lot of different options. You know, you could go to, as long as it was a university that was on par, it's considered the best business school in Canada. And so they just needed to make sure that it was a university that was on par. And, but they obviously quite rightly understand the importance of international experiences. And it was really funny actually, because I had, to be honest, I wanted to go to Asia. And I just thought, you know what, I've been to South Africa. I've done so much traveling around Europe. I didn't need to go to Europe.
Right.
Obviously, North America for me wasn't that different anywhere else in North America. And so I thought, you know what, let's push the boat out. Let's go to Asia. And I remember actually I ran into somebody in the class, in the hallways, and she said, you know, and the university was rather expensive, and the one in Canada. And she said, you know, I can't believe that you're going to be going away, and you're going to, you know, just think about the level of the education that you're getting here, and you're going to lose out on that. And, you know, you're going to lose all of that for, you know, going away for 6 months. And I said, but you know what? This is where you and I obviously really differ, because you can't learn what I'm going to learn in a textbook or even in a conversation in a classroom. And I think that, for me, it was amazing that at the age of whatever, like however old you are at that age, I guess 20, I suppose, or 19, that I already had that insight. And it, and that's obviously continued clearly, through my career. So I finished my degree in Thailand, and then, I decided to, fly to, London to get a job in advertising. I gave myself, some time to sort of settle in. And then I think I flew to Canada. Mm-hmm. Actually, yeah, I did fly to Canada because it was on September the 11th. That's right. I flew. I was in the air when all that stuff happened.
Oh, wow.
So I was flying to Canada, arrived in Canada. My dad's like, oh, I don't know if trying to get into advertising with the market in the way that it is going to be moving forward.
But where did the idea to go get into advertising start?
Yeah, and that's a good question. Again, that's so funny. I decided to travel around Southeast Asia after I graduated. Yeah. And so I decided, you know, I went to Nepal, I went to Indonesia, Cambodia, you know, amazing travel, just meeting incredible people as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to use that sort of 3 months to figure out what I wanted to do. And I thought about advertising, and a lot of people said, no, don't do it. And I said, you know, and I got a few books, and I just read these books on buses around Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. I really, really, really did a lot of research into what I wanted to do. I knew I did, you know, I did Accenture interviews, and I made it to final rounds. I got driven in a limo to Toronto from London, Ontario. And,
wow, that's pretty cool.
And actually the person in the interview said, and this was obviously before I had gone to Thailand for my degree, so, or for my exchange. And the person actually in the interview said, you know what, you have made it this far because genuinely we could hire you, but we think that you would hate it and that you you should probably go into marketing. You won't stick around here. And I thought, that's really interesting. And a lot of people in my degree were really, you know, because it's quite expensive, and also business degrees tend to, at the moment, I think things will change, but it tends to be a lot of investment bankers and consultants. And so, you know, we would be chanting like, what's the main goal of business? To make money. And I'm like, oh my God, this is just not me. It's not me. And I knew that that world wasn't me at all. And that was probably another reason why I went to Thailand. Cause I just thought, oh, you know what? Like, this is, business, I think, is so important, but I've just, you know, the other case study, we worked on the Harvard case study model, and people would talk about, you know, the company's not working very well. We've got all these people who aren't really very good. And then, you know, what do you do in this kind of situation? And half the class would be like, fire everybody. And I'm like, oh my God, I just don't see eye to eye with this kind of mentality. So anyway, I did a lot of research, and I read these books, and I thought, you know what?
Any particular one book that you would like typically recommend, or that really sticked out for you?
The one that Andy Law wrote, and I can't remember what it's called. I've got all my advertising books downstairs, actually, so I can't look at them right now. But Andy Law wrote one. There was Kund and Company. Somebody Kund wrote another one, KUNDE, I think. And I'm trying to think. The Andy Law one for me was really interesting, just because St. Luke's was a really interesting model. And it, I found his approach quite interesting. I've got some other ones. Maybe after
Creative Company has St. Luke's became an editor.
Yes, something like that. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
And
I
then
cheated, by the way. I had to Google it.
And then there's another one that, there was a bit of a social element to it, which I thought was interesting. And I think if I, without having gone into it, but I love the creativity of it. I love the fact that I've never been somebody who really likes long drawn out projects. So for example, I wouldn't be a very good architect, be a very good person working at the World Bank. And I thought a lot about this kind of stuff because these kind of things, they take a long time. You have to have a long-term vision. And you are working on the same thing for probably a very, very long time. Sometimes your entire career, you never see the end of it, you know? And for me, that wasn't what spoke to me. I knew the kind of person I was, the kind of, the things that make me tick. And it was, you know, learning different things all the time, being surrounded by really interesting people, being creative, you know, business and being able to be accountable to things and, you know, all of these surrounded by really intelligent people. And all of these things kind of tick the advertising communications box. And I thought, okay, this to me feels right. And so I did fly back to London and I gave myself 2 weeks working really, really, really hard trying to find a job. And I found one within 2 weeks, which was really amazing in the current market. Or in the market at the time in 2001 after September the 11th. And then it was a really small company called Ideas Unlimited, which, you know, my clients were Greenpeace and, Macmillan Cancer Relief. And, you know, I'm still in touch with one of my clients at Macmillan, which is a thing. And within a year, I got a job at Darcy, which was Darcy at the time, which then obviously turned into Leo Burnett. And to be honest, I think that answers that question, which was, you know, how do I get into advertising?
So, and then did you tend to always work with nonprofit clients, or did you switch around to like different kinds of clients?
Oh, so that's another really good question, because I ended up, the job that I ended up taking at Darcy was actually to replace a grad that had been hired to work on Always at Darcy. And she had left and they saw me being a really good replacement. She was quite similar personality-wise, I think, to her. And they just felt that it would be a good fit for the client and that I would fit at the company. And actually, I really enjoyed working there. And I absolutely adored working on Always. And I thought, you know, what was interesting is a lot of people obviously go into advertising thinking, oh, I'm going to work on Johnny Walker or Honda or whatever these campaigns are that have already made it, that they've already got really cool ads, which in my mind isn't why I got into advertising. And for me, the reason I absolutely adored Always was it was such an incredible insight into women. And around the world, like I worked on Western Europe teams campaign, but then I also worked on Middle East, Africa, and general export area. And so you would get insights to women in Lebanon, women in, you know, Afghanistan, women, and then women in Greece, and women in London. And the challenges that they face are so completely different. And I adored it. The work that we did was actually really cool. And as we know now, you know, some of the greatest work that has come out of Adland recently. And it isn't about working on the really sexy, whatever a sexy brand is. I mean, is Johnny Walker sexy just because it's alcohol?
No, I think nothing. You know? I mean, they think it's as sexy as the latest campaign that was sexy, right? Because right now, Always with the latest campaign, Like a Girl is extremely hot and sexy right now for people in the advertising industry. At least. Exactly. I don't know how widely known it is beyond that. I never trust my own opinion about it.
I don't me either at all. But I think it's sort of there are ways, and I think this is the key thing for me and kind of, I mean, we'll get to this, I guess, but communications and advertising, kind of you can make what you want out of it, really. And I think that there's so many opportunities. You just need to see what makes you tick. And see how you can make a difference. And, you know, there are many opportunities and it doesn't necessarily, like you say, have to be a non-for-profit brand, you know? Yeah,
absolutely. I agree. So you worked at a few different agencies and good ones at that. And my question, I guess, is what came first? Did Brazil come first or the idea for the international exchange come first?
Well, that's another good question. So I very good at this.
I guess I'm getting better with you for this flattery, guys.
I would say, well, I was working at BBH at the time, another agency that I adore and hold very close to my heart. They're a client of ours. So is Leo Burnett, actually, which is amazing because my two agencies that I worked at are both clients of mine. I adored my time at BBH, as you can imagine, because it really is a phenomenal agency. and surrounded by incredibly amazing people. And I went on holiday. I'd met my partner, my husband, and I met him, God, when I was at Leo Burnett. So I don't know, many years ago, 2003, okay. I suppose. And he's from Brazil. And okay. So we actually went on holiday in 2004. And, it was the first time I'd been here. And it was the first time I'd kind of been to a place. I wouldn't say it's at all similar to Asia, but it was the first time that I'd been to a place that was as different as living in North America or in England.
Yeah.
And I saw extreme poverty. Mm-hmm. And I saw things that just made me think, God, you know, how can I in some way do good things with my skills? And I'll get into sort of in a sec how it kind of, how the idea for it came and all that kind of stuff. But it was, that was a trigger for sure.
Yeah.
And I went back to London, and I remember I took a mental health day from work. Sorry, BBH, it was, it all went to a good cause. But I literally, you know, I called it a mental health day, and I just said I was sick, and I just stayed at home, and I knew that there was something percolating in my head. And I couldn't figure out what it was, and I just needed, and I literally just stayed in the room that I was living in, with my feet up on a office chair, sitting in the other office chair, and I just sat there in like silence for literally hours. And then I just started writing.
Yeah.
And it's such a key moment in all of this, because it really was just, and then that literally, it just sort of came from there.
Mm.
Just back to my uncle for a sec, because, around that time, I also went to his funeral. And for me, that was another really big turning point. And I can't remember if it came before or after this, but I think it may have come before. It might have come before my trip to Brazil. But he was really involved in the politics in South Africa from a sort of human rights point of view, and protesting and fighting for people's rights. And at his funeral, there was the Minister of Health.
Mm-hmm.
So you had like the Minister of Health with two bodyguards showing up. And then you also had people from the shanty towns. And, you know, the Minister of Health stood up and talked, but then, and obviously I think he was probably asked to talk. And then what was amazing was that a hand went up at the back of the room, and it was this guy, black guy. And he said, I'd really like to speak. And obviously, unfortunately, no one had thought to ask of other people to speak. And then of course, everyone said, yes, of course, speak, please. So he went up and just told these incredible stories of how Neil, in the face of extreme adversity, went into the shanty towns to give, you know, messages of what was happening on the outside where they couldn't go for reasons of apartheid. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a doctor. He learned Xhosa, which is an African language. He learned Zulu. Actually, I don't know if he learned Zulu, but he definitely learned Xhosa, because he believed, I'm not a vet. Like, I need to be able to speak to people.
Yeah.
And that is not how the sort of regular white South African doctor would think. And then there was this big fat woman who also said, okay, I want to speak too. And she went up, and, you know, she's got this, she had like this beard that she'd clearly kind of trimmed, you know, this big black mama. And she also stood up and she said, you know, I was in jail. I was put in jail, and Neil went and he would write messages on chocolates, and he would pass them through, to me. And that's how he would communicate what was happening. And that for me was my lifesaver. And I just thought, God, to know that somebody's, I mean, he really inspired me throughout my life, clearly inspired so many people, but he had created a mechanism, himself, but also just he really managed to transcend these boundaries and inspire people along the way. And so for me, I just thought, oh God, like he really touched people's lives in a pretty profound way. And for me, that was really, really inspiring. I think just that, again, this trip to Brazil, how I was feeling in advertising, and this probably gets to one of your other questions, but yeah. I'll say it. So,
it's fine.
How it was inspired. And a lot of Thai came from just some pretty strong feelings that I had working in advertising. And I know that a lot of people probably can relate to them too. And it was, you know, that feeling sometimes when you're at a dinner party or you're explaining what you do for a profession, and there's that feeling of apologizing for working in advertising.
Yeah.
And it's that apologetic feeling that really bothered me because of all of this research that I'd done about wanting to work in the industry. And I genuinely, genuinely, hand on heart, still loved it, working in it, for all the reasons that I said. But there was that part missing, and that feeling of, okay, but I really want to do something good with my skills. Like, I think the human being wants to do good things with their skills. That's just, you know, it's an innate, feeling that people have.
Absolutely.
And I think that it was wanting, you know, it was wanting to show people that you don't have to go off to be a doctor. You know, a lot of my family were doctors, and I never wanted to be one. I don't, you know, my brother's an environmental engineer. He's very, very good at what he does. I don't want to be an environmental engineer for the reasons I explained. My sister works in public health. She also incredibly good at what she does. But I don't want to work in public health. And I just, you know, I would be sitting around the table and listening to these amazing stories. But I would just think, oh, like, I know that communications is incredibly powerful. And then that sort of brought me to the next thing of, okay, but our industry could stand for so much more. And people on the outside of it should not be so skeptical of it, because they should see the potential. And people on the inside of it should feel proud. So how can we get our industry to stand for more? If we look at some of the biggest challenges that this world is facing, how can we get our industry to embrace that and understand how they can be a critical part in fixing these challenges? Because we have the power to do that, and the skills. If we, you know, changing behavior is one of the trickiest things that we face in order to, yeah, to solve some of these big challenges. And that's what we do every single day. And so it's just helping people understand how we can be part of that solution. And so then that brought me to the third point, which is, okay, so we need to train, or we need to develop the future leaders of our industry in order to help drive the industry in the direction that it needs to go in.
Yep.
And so it's looking at these high potentials, the people who are going to be running these big companies. And to be honest, what we do isn't even just, it doesn't work necessarily with just advertising agencies. I'm talking to, you know, client, like what we would call clients, but the marketeers, because brands are very much into this conversation of purpose and how can we be part of the solution, and how can we, you know, how can we work more sustainably and also more purposefully. And it's the people who are driving these brands and these, you know, the accounts at the ad agencies and the businesses on a whole. They need to see those insights. They need to be able to take risks. They need to be able to embrace diversity. They need to be able to see the opportunities to innovate, to be able to drive forward. But if you're constantly doing the same thing every single day, you're not going to be able to do that. And so, you know, the quality of our output is in, you know, is influenced by the inspiration that we seek. Yeah. And there's only so much inspiration that you get from going to Pret a Manger at lunchtime.
Yes.
And so, that's kind of, you know, it's those majors, you know, developing the future leaders, getting the industry to stand for more, and providing individuals with the opportunity to do something really worthwhile with their skills is what inspired Ty and kind of, made it happen.
All right. So just for a rundown for anybody who's listening to this, but doesn't know exactly about Ty and what the International Exchange does. So all this inspiration, you created this organization now. And so what's the, how does it work and what does it do?
Okay. So, how it works is we work with communication professionals, primarily in the UK and the US for now, but literally all over the world. It's just where me and my PowerPoint presentation go at the moment. Communication professionals, and the idea is that we take them out of their comfort zone, out of their world, and get them working, on social initiatives. So it can be with NGOs or, social enterprises, or foundations, all over the world. And the placements last for 30 days, but the experience itself lasts for a lot longer than that, because there's a lot of preparation before they go, and we've got leadership coaching and training and all that kind of stuff. But the idea is that they run a project from beginning to end on a cause that, and we have causes that range from, everything. So, you know, fuel-efficient stoves, climate change, human rights, children's rights, street kids, education, you name it. All over the place. So around the continent of Africa, we've got a project at the moment in India, around South America. So Brazil, we've got a project in Guatemala. We've even sent somebody to the UN. We've sent somebody to Paris, actually, to work with an organization that was actually based in Switzerland, but the main point of contact is based in France. So, it really does range as far as the projects are concerned. And the individuals themselves who are chosen to go on this experience, they can choose a cause that speaks to them, or it could be that the conversations that I have with the companies that we work with, it could be that they work with a cause that speaks to them as an agency or as a company, or it could be that, as we know, so many of our clients, speaking our clients from ad world, so, you know, Unilever,
large brands,
the brands, so many brands have social initiatives that they either support, causes that they support, or have set up.
Yes.
And there are very real opportunities that we're in the process of developing where that we can find a really cool connection between the agency, for example, and the client and the brand, and to provide opportunities for people from Adland, for example, to go and support these initiatives, which if we think about the purpose of TIE, like why is it really important? Obviously, it's to develop the future leaders, but it's also, as I said, to help drive these companies forward and to help work better and smarter with our clients. And the way that you can do that is getting these really strategic insights in these different parts of the world and then bring those learnings back. And what happens when the people come back is incredible. And we're starting to develop some incredible case studies because of the results of so many of these projects. And they really are making a huge difference because, again, to get these insights, it's really difficult unless you actually go there and you live and breathe the culture and you really properly understand the dynamics and what is happening.
That's really interesting. And it's actually, I'll be interested to see some of the case studies coming out because it's, I was wondering about one thing and, you know, maybe it's my cynical mind speaking or asking questions here, but, when I left London a few years ago, and I basically left my job in the advertising industry, you have a promo video that is talking about, you know, this character, Terry, who's the epitome of a, an advertising communication person who's a little bit bored, who's kind of seen it all and wondering if this all there is and should I be doing something more meaningful? Should I be going traveling? And I was in that situation a few years ago and I had, this opportunity to go on a charity trip to Tanzania with several other friends in the media and advertising industry. So it wasn't tailored to working with my skills in communication because it was with a, an organization called the Great Football Giveaway. We were out to raise money and then give footballs and play with kids. But it was an absolutely life-changing and amazing experience. Thing is, when I came back, I started my job again and I was just not there anymore. And I shortly after I was like, you know what? I've seen a little bit of this. I got a taste for it. I've got to see more. And I left and spent my time in Asia. So I was wondering, is it a concern for clients that you meet, like new agencies? Do they have that kind of concern before they start working with you?
So, and to be honest, I think that is a real concern, particularly if it's not linked up to the business, and also to the continuity, I guess, of that individual at the company.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, to be honest, these types of experiences, I mean, we know you've experienced it and we know, I mean, they do shake people up and the whole purpose is to shake people up. I mean, that's the thing. We need to shake people up to get people to do things in a different way. And so that's what we're looking to do, but we certainly do want to do it in a, in an organized, not organized, in a strategic way that, then gets channeled in the right direction. And I have to say, yeah, when we first started, and it also depends on the company. It depends actually a lot on the company. It depends on who's getting involved, how they're supported back at their company, what their career opportunities are like, if people are listening to them, if they see opportunity to do the types of things that they want to do. I mean, all of those are major factors. And I often, I mean, I do say to clients, if this isn't something that is linked up to your corporate responsibility, if we're going to use sort of a slightly outdated term, but to your corporate responsibility department and to your training or
human resources,
professional development department, this is not going to work. If it's just a tag on, if it's, oh, this seems kind of cool, yeah, let's just send somebody and then they come back and it's like, oh, where were you again?
Yes.
They will leave. I mean, they will leave. And so I mean, when I speak to people and they say, okay, we really, really need to think about how we can get this in. We don't want to rush into it. And I say, perfect. I don't want you to rush into it either because it won't work. So when, you know, I would say we've been going now for 10 years, 10 years since I actually developed the company. I would say we piloted in 2007. We only sent two people. We sent one person in 2008. So, I mean, we're still, you know, we certainly weren't working at the capacity that we're working at now, but we have been going for 10 years in theory. And we've got a lot of stories now to tell. And I would say, yeah, like at the beginning of all of this, I was still trying to figure out how it was going to work and how to make sure that we, you know, give the biggest return on investment to our clients and how to make it strategic. And we've also been learning as we go. I'm happy to say that our two founding clients are still with us, which is Leo Burnett and Wieden & Kennedy.
Fantastic.
And
I guess it's the same thing for the NGOs and the social enterprises that you're working with. I mean, you want to make sure that they have some long lasting value as well, not just somebody who comes in and out and then just leaves everything as it was.
No, absolutely. And that's absolutely key, which is actually why we only work with, I mean, that's one of the biggest reasons why we only work with, because as you can imagine, a lot of people want to do this kind of experience and they say, you know, how can I get involved? Just, I'm a freelancer. I'd like to go away for a month. And there are a lot of companies that do send individuals, and I just point them in that direction because what we do is actually rather expensive, but it's because it's incredibly buttoned down, incredibly thorough. Because one, I need to make sure that the companies, our clients, clients as in paying clients, because the NGOs are our clients too, but it's just a slight, they're involved in a slightly different way. They get the biggest return on investment, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done to ensure that, to make that possible. Yes. But then absolutely, our NGO partners love working with us because it is incredibly thorough. They know that they're getting somebody that's really good because they're really busy. I mean, we're all really busy. The NGOs have very little human resource support and very little money, and they are doing incredible work on the ground. And to have somebody implanted into their organization for 30 days can be a huge distraction. Yes. And the whole purpose is for it not to be a distraction, for it to add value. But for it to add value, we need to make sure it's a very targeted project. We need to make sure that everyone knows what's happening, that, you know, the person that arrives basically can hit the ground running. And there's a lot of work that needs to happen in order for that to be possible. So our objective is that both sides win. And we, at no time do we see this as a, it's, you know, volunteer tourism, because it's not volunteer tourism. Yeah.
And about how many people are you able to send on experiences right now, candidates, or I don't know how you call them, but
Participants, I suppose. I need to figure out how to brand that. So I have a couple. In a year, we send on average sort of between kind of 7 to 10.
Okay.
But we are looking to increase that. It really is still me and my PowerPoint presentation going and talking to people. But I actually just came back from London and New York and had very, very successful meetings with some really great agencies that I'll talk about once it's definite. Yeah. But they're looking very likely to happen. So it sort of feels like people are starting to really understand it. And I had another conversation with a really interesting brand, which are showing real interest. So it sort of feels like it's the tipping point, I think. So I'm hoping that we're able to scale up a bit, because there's a lot of organizations out there that can really benefit, and some really interesting ways that the private sector can strategically tie this into, you know, work that they're already doing or work that their clients are doing. And then, you know, you can just see the real difference that that can make moving forward. So I'm quite excited.
Wow. Awesome. And for anybody who might be listening to this, this podcast and is working for an agency or works in communication or marketing, and what's the best way for them to talk about the international exchange to their agency or company if they think it's an interesting idea? Because
that's a really good question, because I'm trying to figure that out. It's like, what is your elevator pitch? I don't have one. It takes me really long.
They just say, hey, you should talk to Philippa, basically.
I mean, I sort of check out our website for sure. But I think, because actually I do get a lot of emails from people who say, actually, I just had an email from somebody at AMV who, you know, he's an account director. He's, you know, he was working at Leo Burnett. He's been following Ty. He's desperate to, you know, as an individual, get involved with AMV, and so he's, you know, speaking with AMV to hopefully see if they're interested. And yeah, you know, you get the email, I'm really interested, I'd like to, and then I sort of respond with, okay, here's a presentation and here's some information about it. But I mean, I think in short, it's a way to develop your high potential talent. It's a way to give people an opportunity to use their skills to make a difference and feel a real purpose, both in their role at the agency, but also to feel like they have purpose in their career. Because I think, I mean, we have really thorough evaluations at the end of a tie placement, where we get the individuals and the NGOs and everyone who's involved really to evaluate it. And it's, you know, a pretty thorough process and incredibly transparent. They can say whatever they want. And I would say like 99.999% of the time, it's very positive. And, you know, the people from the industry world, it's like they have read each other's evaluations, which obviously they haven't, but it's, you know, I've got so much more confidence in my skills. I feel so much more belief in my industry. I'm now more aware of the power of communications. Yeah. I feel this energy that I didn't have before, and I'm so excited to get back and channel that into, you know, my role. I've got really great ideas as to what I can do back at the agency. Oh my gosh, there's a real niche here. Oh my gosh, I see myself working in a better way with my clients. So it's all of these things that we talk about in the presentation, which is okay. They develop, yeah, you know, more confidence, wow, and insights to new markets. And like, but they really do. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's if you're looking to develop your high potential talent, if you're looking to find really innovative and exciting ways to not only make a difference, but to also, make a difference to the world, but also to your company and to your industry, and be something that you can talk about in recruitment interviews,
yeah,
then this is a real answer to that.
All right, fantastic. Is there a project on the NGO or nonprofit side of things that was realized that you're, like, let's say the proudest example of something that happened?
Oh my God. I mean, actually, there's loads. I'll just very quickly.
Or some qualifying factor, yeah, to exactly mention one.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's two that I can just really quickly explain.
Yeah, sure.
One, there was an organization that we worked with, which we're still working with, actually. It's called Hestian. It's a social enterprise, actually, based in Malawi, and they, mm-hmm, work with fuel efficient stoves. As you probably know, but I'll just recap. I mean, fuel efficient stoves are really, really important because in places like Malawi, the population cut down a lot of trees.
Yeah.
That obviously deforestation. But it takes them a long time to cut down all this wood. So, I mean, economically, they're not working. The smoke inhalation in the kitchens is really high. And so, you know, lower respiratory tract infections, I think, is the second cause of death to HIV in these parts of the world. So there's health implications. And then, you know, we're not even talking about CO2. So, you know, real reasons why we need to cut down the amount of wood that's being cut down and used to cook food. So these stoves are really affordable. They're made of clay. They use a minute amount of wood to create the same amount of heat to be able to cook. And the challenge was simple. They needed to make these stoves sexy and to get more people wanting them. But they just needed more people to know about it. So in the 2 years that they were going, they'd sold 500 stoves. And they're like, we need to get more stoves out. So we had Trevor from Wyden Kennedy, New York. He went out to Malawi. You know, as you can imagine, Trevor, the designer, doesn't usually work on strategy. He doesn't usually have to think of media plans. He certainly doesn't have to think of, you know, account man making something happen. And obviously on Thai, you have to basically become the CEO / creative director / media person, producer, account person, strategist. And it was amazing. I mean, he came out of his silo. He created this amazing photographic documentary kind of campaign that raised awareness of the benefits, but also the real life stuff that was happening on the ground because of the old way of doing things and just how the clay stoves can make a difference.
Wow.
They did a huge presentation to government officials and to businesses and they created this opportunity to present all of this.
Hmm.
The day of the launch, 10,000 stoves were ordered.
Wow.
A year later, I think something like 50,000 stoves. And I haven't checked in with them lately, but I know that we have fundamentally helped them turn this around, which is really exciting. Another example here in Brazil, there's this street children organization called O Pequeno Nazareno.
Mm-hmm.
And they work with street kids basically to help them get off the streets, to get off the drugs. And they have this beautiful fazenda, which is like a farm. We call it a farm, but it's a beautiful piece of land just outside of the city, away from the vices of the street, to help clean them up. And it's a 2-year program. They don't sort of kidnap these kids and put them there. I mean, they have to show desire to go there, but I mean, literally, if they show desire, they go. And they are there for 2 years. They get clean. And they get taught. I mean, they get education to then work.
Wow.
So as you can imagine, they probably go at let's say 11, let's say, they go younger as well, but they basically come out at around 13, mm-hmm, but they're 13, 14, maybe 15 years old. And obviously they're ex street kid drug addicts. So even though they've got the education, who is going to hire them? And that was the biggest challenge. And so you had these young people coming out, and the key in all of this is they need to work, because if not, they're going to go back to the streets.
Yeah.
And so it's a real, real challenge. And so we had Dylan Viner, actually a fellow from WPP. He was out, he was from JWT New York, but he came through the fellowship. And he came to Brazil, and he created this campaign that basically, I mean, it was beautiful. It used all of the, they chose four key people who were part of this program, who were needing to get jobs. Edson was one of the guys that really touched Dylan's heart. I mean, they got on really, really well. He became one of, you know, one of the main people who was photographed for this campaign. And I think there were 22 young people who needed jobs. All of them were hired at the end of this campaign.
Wow.
And actually, I ran into the person from the organization the other day, and she said that they're still all working. And I mean, that,
amazing.
Like, that's not a small thing. This is huge. This has fundamentally changed the lives of 22 people. And that really, I mean, it's really incredible.
Yeah. Wow. It's brilliant and so inspiring to listen to you, Philip. All the work that's going on is really amazing. And I'm running out of superlatives.
Appreciate the support.
So you talked about some of your the leadership training and coaching that goes into the program for the people participating. And before working in advertising, I used to work in the training and development industry. Is there any particular inspiration or methodologies that you're working from, or you developed everything from scratch? Or
that's a good question. To be honest, it's I would say the original format was, I don't know if it's inspired, but it was structured after ADP. Accenture have a similar program to TIE. It's not similar because they're consultants, so they have more time, but it's the ADP program actually is structured after the VSO program that works with individuals, and they also work with companies as well. So VSO and ADP were really, really heavily involved and helpful as I set up TIE. So Gib Bullock, who created ADP, is one of our advisors. So he's actually since left Accenture, but he was a huge help. He put me in touch with their trainer. Every time somebody goes on an ADP project, they are trained by somebody called Evelyn Henderson. And somebody else, David, but I never met David, but, Evelyn, I met back in 2006, went on one of the ADP trainings. I hired her to be our trainer. And so it kind of, I mean, the structure with the development training started from there. Just cause it, in our view and in Accenture's view, I mean, if you're going to be sending professionals out to work in development, it's really, really important that they understand what development is, what an NGO is. You'd be surprised how many people don't know what an NGO is or why they exist. Different things to consider, like power. So, you know, you really actually do need to be aware what being white and from the West, what power that is. And actually, we are so used to blagging it in communications. And it's fine to blag it if you're selling Coke, but it probably isn't okay to blag it if you're talking about people's lives or creating something that's going to promote a livelihood of someone or potentially, you know, stigmatize or discriminate against people.
Yeah.
So it's really, really important to be aware of, you know, the beneficiaries and them having a voice and all those kind of dynamics that we don't talk about in advertising.
Yeah.
But it's really important that you understand it when you're working in development or creating public service announcement.
Yeah,
so that's a big part of TIE, and that I certainly didn't come up with that training. That was Evelyn that did that.
I was just going to say, apparently there's a large part of like the school of throwing people in the deep end and letting them swim.
And to be honest, I would say that that is definitely a big part of it. But I think that it needs to, like, we provide that safety net to ensure the success of it. And I think that's the thing. So, yeah. So I think, and the whole time, like before individuals go, we make it really clear that we are not running this project for you, the actual sort of 30-day project. We are not a decision maker. Neither is your agency.
Yeah.
The decision makers are all the beneficiaries and the stakeholders involved in this project, you being one of them. You're driving it, but you're not better or worse than anyone else. You're not, you know, the leader of it. You are working in partnership with the other stakeholders, and you're going to drive it with them. But we will, you know, check in. We are there all the time. I mean, if you have any questions, we're there, you know, right away kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the leadership coaching, is a really important part of it. Actually came as a response to your previous question around people leaving.
Okay.
Because what we were finding, not that a lot of people were leaving, but what we felt we weren't doing was we were rounding off the experience. So people would go on this experience, then we're like, okay, see you later. You know,
yeah.
Good luck getting back to your job.
Right.
And it just felt like we needed to do a little bit more preparation, but also bookend it.
Yeah.
So a big part of it, you know, we've always asked people what their objectives are. We've asked them to work very closely with people at their agency or company to find out, you know, what is their personal objective? What is their professional objective? And what is the agency objective in all of this? Because obviously we've got the project objectives, but it's really, really important that the individuals are focused as to how they and their company can get the most out of this experience.
Yes.
And it's important to do a little bit of thinking beforehand. We also get them to think about what can you do to plan for your return? Because there's so much that we do to plan for their experience. Everything from pre-departure guide training, like pre-departure stuff, you know, vaccines to the project itself, to this training. You know, we have numerous conversations, as you can probably imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But what are they doing to plan for their return? And that is really key. It's a question that comes up actually in the application. So when they're even applying at the beginning, what do you think, how can this experience do you think could impact your work when you're back? But also it's a really important question, because who do you need to talk to beforehand? Who do you need to engage? What are the reasons you're doing this? I mean, is it that you hate your job and you're wanting to find a way out? Because this is not
the answer. Then it's not the right solution.
So it's, you know, are you feeling like, you know, what are the reasons that you're hoping to do this? So then what do you think you can draw on when you're back? And what do you think you need to do, and who do you think you need to talk to make sure that you can still hold on to some of those feelings, whatever they are? So that's the kind of pre-leadership coaching that we have a phenomenal leadership coach, Janice McNamara, and also Heidi Kohler. So we've got two coaches. They're wonderful, and a lot of it's about entrepreneurship. A lot of it's about how, and I don't know if you know the term entrepreneurship, but you know, it's how can you be an entrepreneur, but within your company?
Right.
And how can you draw on the resources and your colleagues and the people who love you and also make them money? How can you draw on all of that to make big things happen, with the vision that you might have, you know, from this type of experience?
Right.
And then the back end bookend leadership coaching is obviously after the experience. Once they're back, we say within a month, they need to have the coaching.
Yeah.
And it's drawing on all of everything. So, you know, what did you get out of it? Was it what you imagined? What else did you get out of it? How are you going to be engaging with? And that has definitely made a difference to really help people channel this experience.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. And just one question, which is going to allow me to just being mindful of time. And I'm going to segue into a couple of last questions before we end that are usually called the cold end questions. The traditional question, because this is the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. So do you have a favorite flavor of ice cream?
God, it's such a funny question, because my daughter, she's 5, she is totally addicted to ice cream, and it's so funny.
That's
so
kind of how I was at 5. I think that's where it comes from.
She's addicted to ice cream. Anyway, and we have this really great friends of ours that actually make this amazing ice cream that is better than Häagen-Dazs. I mean, it really is incredible, and they live just down the street. So I've actually just bought this incredible tiramisu ice cream, and it's so good. And I am trying to cut out gluten, and it doesn't have gluten in it, and I'm very excited. So I've just got my freezer full of this tiramisu ice cream. So, I'm not as addicted to it as my daddy.
Awesome. And is there a traditional, like, kind of ice cream in Brazil that would be different that people might not know about, or either a flavor or a way of making it?
I don't think so. Good. Although I live across the street from an ice cream shop, and but I'm not familiar with it. I don't think so.
Okay.
Not the same way that if you were talking to somebody who is based in Italy would probably.
Absolutely fine. Okay, and you've traveled extensively, so this is never an easy question. But is there a particular place that you love over any other, or would recommend particularly anybody to go visit?
God, yeah, I have traveled so much, and I could recommend.
I know it's
so
always a difficult question when anybody asks me. I hate it, but I'm asking it anyway.
Yeah. to be honest, I would, well, actually, I would say where I live, I really like. Olinda's an amazing place. But just to sort of change things up a little bit, just because it has such a bad rap, Bangkok has such a bad rap. A lot of people, you know, when you go there and you're on your way to the island, it's this dirty, loud, noisy, yucky place that just sort of people are just dying to get out of. And I lived there for, well, yeah, like 6 months. And I would say that it's without a doubt one of my favorite places. I don't know if I would live there again, to be honest. I don't think it's the kind of lifestyle that I would necessarily want. But as a place to really properly experience and get under the skin of,
yeah,
I would highly recommend it.
Do you have a favorite Thai dish?
Oh, God. I always get red curry, always. Yeah. But I, God, the salad, the...
Somtam? Green papaya salad. Yeah. That's so good.
And I'm happy to, I can count to 10 in Thai. So that makes me, you know, feel like I've been there.
So I'll be adding all the links to the Thai and the international exchange on the show notes. Anybody can find you on Twitter as well. You're at Philippa White. Is that right?
Yes, Philippa White. And actually, just as a kind of shout out, because we've got, four placements happening up until the beginning of April. So it's going to be a really, really, really busy few months or couple months. And on our Instagram page and on our Facebook page, like the International Exchange, Facebook page and also the International Exchange Altogether Instagram page. If you sign up to those, you're going to get some pretty cool insights to, all of these placements because we get our participants to take over our channels.
Brilliant.
So you'll get the Tom Reese takeover and Kelly takeover and Scott and Kate. And, they're all in different places. So we've got Tom is in India. We've got Scott in Ghana. We've got Kelly in Brazil and Kate's going to Malawi. So if you sign up to those, you're going to get to see those experiences in those worlds through their eyes.
Amazing. If you sign up. So that's Facebook page, the International Exchange, and the same thing on Instagram. And I'll add the links on the show notes.
That would be amazing. Thank you.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Yeah. Well, you go and check those out. And, that was amazing. Thank you so much for your time, Philippa. Good luck with all the different projects.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
All right. Well, that was our show. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you do enjoy the show, again, like it makes a hell of a difference. If you've enjoyed it and you know a friend that would enjoy it, just send it out to them. If you work in advertising and marketing and you really enjoyed listening and hearing about the International Exchange, you know what? Send an email to a few of your colleagues. Tell them about it. All I want is for more people to check out the show, right? And I generally alternate like between advertising, marketing, media, and game design. So, I mean, if you're like me and interested in both, this is like bingo. If you're only interested in one of those two, then you check out and select the episodes. However, I do recommend, you know, checking out the other episodes because I cross-reference some of the information and you never know what you might learn. I do interview like a variety of different kinds of people. So you can find everything on my website, obviously, icecreamforeveryone.net. You can follow me on Twitter if ever you have any questions or you want to recommend anybody for the show. I love to have new ideas for the show. It's really useful because, believe it or not, it takes quite a bit of work to figure out who I'm going to be talking to and publish it every week. I don't know how long I'm going to manage to publish it every week, but so far, so good. So, you know, and on Twitter, I'm at HippoWill. You can contact me via my website as icecreamforeveryone.net or on the Facebook page, like the Facebook page. It always helps. People like seeing if I have a lot of likes. I don't have that many likes just yet, but, you know, hopefully it'll come around. And that's about it for now. Watch out for new episodes coming out soon. Have fun. Thank you for listening again and bye.